morning, everyone. Today I'm going to present a pilot evaluation of interpregnancy primary care. We call it interpregnancy care. It's also sort of synonymous with interconception care. So this is an evaluation of interpregnancy primary care and social support for African American women at risk for recurrent very low birth weight delivery. And this intervention was not carried out as part of a Healthy Start intervention, but rather as an intervention within a county, public-supported county healthcare system, Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. This is our study team led by Dr. Alfred Brann, who's actually a pediatrician at Emory University. So to begin with, I'll give you some background perinatal statistics for the state of Georgia, which helped inform our intervention program. First, the largest contributor to Georgia's infant mortality rate is the birth of low birth weight and very low birth weight infants. And in particular, it is these very low birth weight infants that comprise only 2% of the births in Georgia, yet 50% of the infant deaths. And in particular, African American women in Georgia have twice the rate of low birth weight and 3 to 4 times the rate of very low birth weight. And that is the major contributor to the disparity in infant mortality that is observed between blacks and whites. Also, there's a growing body of evidence that links the delivery of a very low birth weight infant to aspects of a woman's health, including unrecognized and poorly controlled medical problems, including hypertension and diabetes, reproductive tract infections, especially if present at the time of conception or soon after conception, substance abuse disorders, periodontal disease, and psychosocial problems, including stress and exposure to domestic violence. And short interpregnancy intervals certainly increase the risk of preterm and low birth weight delivery, and meta-analysis have shown that those the critical interval does vary by race. And for African American women, it seems critical to achieve at least a 9-month interpregnancy interval. But of course, as mentioned, the 18 or 24 month interval is better. Finally, there's no obstetrical or prenatal intervention or assessment that's been successful in predicting or influencing a woman's first preterm or low birth weight delivery. Rather, the single best predictor of having a preterm or low birth weight delivery is ever having had one. Thus, we chose to focus on this group of women who had had the very low birth weight infants. So the goal of our program was to evaluate the effectiveness of interpregnancy care toward improving subsequent reproductive outcomes for women who had already delivered a very low birth weight infant. And we proposed to do that by improving the woman's interpregnancy health and assisting her in developing and achieving a reproductive plan for herself. And this was done in conjunction with educating women about the importance of having a planned pregnancy if they did desire a subsequent pregnancy, and the importance of achieving at least a 9-month and preferably an 18-month interpregnancy interval. The participants in our program were African American women who qualified for indigent care status through Grady Health System and who delivered a very low birth weight infant, and that could have been a stillborn or a live-born infant at Grady during the feasibility phase. And I would like to say that these women who qualify for indigent care status through Grady are the women who would lose their Medicaid coverage at the 60-day postpartum mark. And these women, according to census tract that we looked at, were coming from communities where the very low birth weight rate was at least 4 times the average rate for the metropolitan area. During our 4-month feasibility phase, we enrolled 29 women of 38 eligible, so we did have 9 women who declined to participate. And we completed 24 months of follow-up for these women in March of 2006. And it's really that 24-month evaluation that I'm going to be presenting to you today. Our intervention package, what we call IPC, intervention package, consisted of definition of an individualized plan for the woman that systematically addressed 7 areas linked to low birth weight and preterm delivery. And this individualized plan was done in conjunction with the 6-week postpartum visit. So the 6-week postpartum visit sort of was expanded to include to be the first interpregnancy care visit. And at that visit, we systematically addressed reproductive planning, prevention, screening, and treatment for sexually transmitted infections, micronutrient supplementation, prevention, screening, and treatment for periodontal disease, management of chronic diseases if present, and treatment referral for substance abuse if present, and screening and treatment for depression, psychosocial stressors, and domestic violence. So in addition to sort of specifying what the plan was for the women at that first visit, we provided them with health and dental services in accordance with their plan for 24 months, at basically at no cost to them for 24 months, in conjunction also with community outreach via a trained resource mother who was a lay woman who was trained for us by the Fulton County Health Department to sort of facilitate life skills and linkage with existing community resources. The care was delivered by a multidisciplinary team, including a family nurse practitioner and a family physician who really provided the bulk of the primary care and linkage to required specialty care. We also had a nurse case manager, a social worker, and a resource mother. The primary care visits for the women occurred every 1 to 3 months, really depending on their chronic health conditions, and we delivered that primary care in a group setting in which group educational experiences were integrated with the care, and we really used the centering pregnancy model for prenatal care to deliver that group care. And I'll say, in initially sort of formulating our group experience, we had planned to address health education and those sorts of needs through the group model. But what we found was early on we were having trouble sort of retaining women and attracting them to the group. So what we did from there, we sort of assessed what they wanted and what their competing factors were. And they were really concerned about finding jobs and improving their own skill set. So what we did through the centering model was we really tried to deliver sort of interviewing skills, completing job applications, how to present themselves professionally, telephone skills, keyboarding skills. We sort of did that off the cuff as part of the group, and then we would lead into a health education and their individualized health care. And they seemed to really find that to be valuable, and that seemed to help retain the women. The women also received home visits and telephone contact by the resource mother at least monthly to address their psychosocial issues and to link them with community resources. For the evaluation of the program, we compared the health status of the women before and after participation, and we also compared the proportion of women enrolled in our program who achieved desirable 9-month or optimal 18-month interpregnancy intervals to that of a historical control cohort. And finally, we compared the average number of pregnancies experienced and the average number of adverse pregnancy outcomes experienced by women in our intervention group to that of a historical control cohort. So this historical control cohort was also derived from women who delivered very low birth weight babies at Gray Memorial Hospital during the 18 months prior to our initiation of the program. And they otherwise, except for the time frame, met the same eligibility criteria, and we restricted them to the same census tracts of residents since we knew that census tract seemed to be associated with so many other sociodemographic markers and risk status for very low birth weight delivery. So this table shows the characteristics of our 29 women in the intervention cohort, and we did 2-to-1 for the control cohort, and the women in the control cohort. And you can see they were similar with respect to age category and gravidity status, and most markers of parity, most importantly being prior preterm delivery status. However, we did have a statistically higher proportion of women in our intervention group who were primiparous compared to the historical cohort. And this slide gives a description of the birth index infants, the baby that basically got them into the program. And they were similar, the babies of the women were similar with respect to birth weight and proportion who were stillborn and who were macerated stillborn. However, we did have a higher proportion of twin gestations of women in the intervention cohort. And I'm letting you know that just for subsequent comparisons, there were some differences in the group, and this wasn't a randomized trial. So when we look at participation in the interpregnancy care program, we sort of broke it out. The program was supposed to last 24 months. We looked at participation during the first 12 and the second 12 months. And during the first year, we were able to retain 21 of 29 women as active participants. Active participants meant they maintained monthly contact with the resource mother and at least two visits with us in the interpregnancy care clinic. We lost eight, two who moved out of state, and three who electively disenrolled, and three more who were lost to follow-up. And four of these were actually lost or disenrolled prior to their first visit. So they were consented at the time of the delivery and mission, and by the time they were to come see us, they had dropped out of the program, and two more after a single visit. And most of these, really all but one of these, had documented history of substance abuse. During the second 12 months, we lost an additional five more. One who left us, I guess, in a good state. She became employed and earned health insurance and was no longer able to participate. We didn't exclude her from the program, but she became very busy and couldn't participate anymore. And four others who were lost to follow-up. And again, those four had a history of substance abuse. So now the next few slides will look at the impact of the interpregnancy care program for the 24 months of participation. And what this slide shows is the women, that there were really seven of the women who had, for which we were able to document that they had previously undiagnosed or poorly managed chronic health conditions. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into the changes that we were able to effect, but just to point out for these seven women, for six of the seven, we were really able to provide them with medical management to assist them in bringing up the status of their health condition to get good control of their disease. One woman, the last woman detailed there, was lost to follow-up really before we were able to help her. This slide shows the acute health conditions that we addressed during the 24 months of the program for the active participants. And you can see that 15 of 21 were diagnosed and treated with reproductive tract infections, mostly chlamydia. And these were women who were participating in the group and were getting sex education, access to condoms. We still had a lot of infections. 5 of 21 were treated for iron deficiency anemia. 8 screened positive for postpartum depression and were linked to community resources. I have to say, though, although we were linking them to the standing community resources, most of them really did not want to go to get care from those sources. They sort of identified myself and the nurse practitioner as their primary care provider, and they really wanted to get their care through us. And we were able to do that, but what we originally set out to do was really to try to link them with existing resources, and we found that they really did want to have a medical home, and they saw us as that home. 7 of 21 women were diagnosed and treated for periodontal disease and oral infections. We also looked at some social outcomes, and I think the credit for this improvement really goes to the resource mother. 18 of 21 of our active participants had no high school diploma or GED upon entry into the program, and 13 of those 18 were assisted. Eight of those actually did achieve their diploma or GED through a lot of outreach with the resource mother. Five others enrolled but did not complete their GED program. If we look at reproductive planning, all 21 of the 21 active participants did develop and articulate a reproductive plan for themselves, and all of them did choose and accept a method of contraception during the first year. Now, moving on to more of a comparative analysis where we look at the results of our cohort compared to the historical cohort, this slide shows the proportion of women who conceived at least one pregnancy within 9 months of the index delivery. None of the women in the intervention cohort became pregnant within 9 months, compared to 31% in our historical control cohort. And if we compare those proportions, that is statistically significant difference. Likewise, this slide shows the proportion of women who conceived at least one pregnancy within 18 months of the index delivery. And 17% of women in our intervention cohort did become pregnant within 18 months, compared to 50% of women in the intervention cohort. And again, this was a statistically significant difference. Because pregnancy is an event that can happen more than once to a woman during the 18 months, we decided to compare the number of pregnancies conceived within 18 months. So, for the intervention cohort, 24 of the 29 women experienced no pregnancies within 18 months. 3 experienced 1 pregnancy, and 2 experienced 2 pregnancies, for an average pregnancy per woman of 0.241. And these are the numbers for the historical control cohort, for an average number of pregnancies of 0.621. So if we, from those numbers, and we did a Poisson regression, we can conclude that the women in the historical cohort had 2.57 times as many pregnancies in the 18-month period as did women in our intervention cohort. This slide gives the subsequent outcomes of the pregnancies. So for the 7 pregnancies conceived within 18 months in our intervention cohort, 3 were adverse outcomes, and we had a composite adverse outcome, which was really any live-born infant who was low birth weight or any stillborn or spontaneous abortion. So we had 43% with an adverse outcome. These numbers are really small, of course, though. And in the historical control cohort, 58% ended in an adverse outcome. And if we just compared those proportions, these numbers are so small we weren't able to show any difference. But we did, using the same Poisson regression technique, looked at the difference in the average number of adverse pregnancy outcomes. Not the proportion, but the average number. And again, of our 29 women, 27 experienced no adverse outcome, 1 experienced 1 adverse outcome, and 1 experienced 2, for an average number of 0.103. And here you can see the same layout for the women in the historical control cohort. So if we compare these averages, again, there was a statistically significant difference, with women in the historical cohort having 3.5 times as many adverse pregnancy outcomes for pregnancies conceived within 18 months. We also looked at the cost of this interpregnancy care per participant for the full 24 months. And so for the healthcare component, the average cost was right around $2,400, and that is for an average of 7 visits over the 24 months. The cost for the resource mother outreach component was about $1,800 per participant, leading to a total program cost of right around $4,200 for full 24 months of health care and resource mother outreach. And in a moment, what we'll do is compare the cost of that care to the cost of hospital care for subsequently birthed low birth weight infants. So if we look at the historical control cohort, there were 10 live-born infants who were low birth weight within 18 months, conceived within 18 months. And that total cost of initial hospital care, that's the cost of the care prior to their discharge during the delivery admission, so that's the only cost we're considering here, was $555,000. If we divide by 10, $55,000. So we just did a simple cost analysis. So for the 29 women enrolled in IPC, we looked at their cost of the program and the cost of the 1 live-born low birth weight infant that was delivered, for a total program total program cost plus cost of infant of $177,000. Now, if we consider the figures from the historical control cohort, we actually would have expected 5 low birth weight infants to have been conceived and born to those women. And if we just multiply that, the cost of those infants, expected 5 infants, would have been $277,000 for a net savings of $100,000. So although the program doesn't seem cheap at a cost of right around $4,200, it's sort of the costs that are averted by avoiding the birth of low birth weight infants. So we learned important lessons about the impact of interpregnancy care. And that is, for women who've delivered a very low birth weight infant, the provision of interpregnancy care contributes to the availability of primary care, which did seem to identify and lead to appropriate management of chronic and acute conditions that are strongly epidemiologically linked to low birth weight and preterm delivery. The interpregnancy care contributed to the woman's development of a reproductive plan for herself. and to the achievement of a 9-month interpregnancy interval and a reduction in the average number of pregnancies conceived within 18 months and the average number of adverse pregnancy outcomes for those conceived pregnancies. We also learned lessons about the content of interpregnancy care for women who've had a very low birth weight delivery, and that is there's a substantial prevalence of unrecognized and poorly managed chronic diseases, as well as reproductive tract infections, anemia, and substance abuse following a very low birth weight delivery, all of which are linked to low birth weight and preterm delivery. We also learned that substance abusers who do not enroll in the treatment programs are difficult to track. And as I mentioned, most of the women that we lost to follow-up were, in fact, substance abusers. And finally, that the receipt of healthcare services for themselves, for these women, is really less of a priority for them than is securing income and employment and their own care taking for their family. And I think that when I looked at the numbers of our participation, I sort of felt like we had failed in not really able to retain the women even at a higher percentage than we did. But as I've talked to people around the country, I see that we actually do have pretty good numbers, comparatively speaking, and I really think that it was the group experience, which had been described to me by other women from the Black Women's Caucus who I took spoken with as kind of having like a sisterhood approach, as well as linking the health services delivery to sort of self-enhancement, perhaps was the key to even keeping the number of women that we did have. Support for our program was provided by all of those funders listed here, with strong support from CDC and the Healthcare Georgia Foundation, who we'd like to thank for their support. And I'll be happy to answer any questions about our program. We conclude.